Hi, Josh and Drew. My name is Daniela, and I am from Newmarket, Ontario. You can use my name. First off, I want to say thank you for all of the information and resources that you provide in your podcast. It is extremely helpful. I am an anxiety sufferer now for many years. I was just wondering if you could do an episode almost mimicking what a therapy session would look like when you are addressing anxiety, OCD, worries. It's really hard to kind of get past that bullcrap meter in your mind and addressing those core beliefs and those core fears.
Welcome to Disordered. This is episode 45, entitled, What Does an Anxiety Therapy Session Look Like? Or What Does Anxiety Therapy Look Like? I am Drew Linsalata. I am a therapist in training in the U.S. in the state of New York, specializing in anxiety and anxiety disorders. I am an author and a podcaster on this topic and a former sufferer of anxiety and depression myself for many years.
And I'm Joshua Fletcher, also known as Anxiety Josh. I'm a psychotherapist based in Manchester in the U.K., author, content creator, and co-host of this podcast.
Welcome back.
That's a really good question. What does anxiety therapy look like? There's many different kind of types of therapy, but we thought we're going to open this episode today by demonstrating what I would do as a therapist. I'm trained in CBT and humanistic counseling. Yeah, we're going to demonstrate what we do now. Drew, would you like to be the client today?
I will totally be the client. By the way, it's Academy Award season, so those of you who have connections, please submit this performance for the consideration of the Academy, because it's going to be good.
Well, we're both going to be kind of performing. I'll try and not say jokes and stay in role.
But sounds good.
Yeah, why not? What better way than to model? We'll just do it 5 minutes, maybe 10.
Yep.
And show you what anxiety therapy looks like. Why not?
Yeah, I'm just going to be 2005 Drew coming to my therapist, Josh.
Okay, no worries. That sounds brilliant.
Yep.
So what we'll do is we will conduct the session after the sound of the eagle. When the eagle cries, we are in character. Okay, you ready, Drew?
Yeah, that's how every session should start.
Welcome, Drew. Come in. Feel free to sit down. Choose a seat. I don't mind where I sit, but you can sit wherever you like.
Cool. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Thanks for coming today. Obviously, I know you explained a bit on the phone and over email, but yeah, how are you feeling today? What's happening?
How am I feeling today? I'm on the edge of panic right now. It was really hard to even get here. And you're only like 10 minutes from me, so I'm struggling.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what does that feel like? How's it present?
Well, I feel like I can't get a deep enough breath, and you look like you're about a million miles away from me right now, and I'm having a hard time hearing anything, and my heart is pounding, and I feel like I'm right at the edge of just like, I got to get up and run out of this place, because I hate this.
Okay. Well, it sounds like anxiety's very high at the moment, but mm-hmm. Just know you're okay. You know, if you need to take a moment out, you can do. You know, I'm not going to stop you or run after you. But that's okay. What you need to realize is that your body is currently in the threat response. But I'm pretty sure the longer you sit here, you'll realize it will start to calm down. Also, you know, it's your first time here in the therapy room. You're going to be a bit anxious, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, I like to demystify anxiety first. We try and put it, when we get it on paper, it becomes a little less scary. I like to split it into three: thoughts, feelings, and sensations. You know, it's an anxious thought when it begins with what if. So tell me some of your, and if you don't mind, I'll write it down and we can make it on this piece of paper together. Tell me some of your what if thoughts.
Just give me a second.
Take your time.
Everything just feels so much right now. Like I want to call for help. Okay. Tell me the question again. The question again.
Yeah. So the question is, what are these what if thoughts now just flowing through your mind? They're just thoughts, but I know they feel very real and intense. But what are they?
Oh, the loudest one right now is, what if something is really wrong with me? And it feels really like something is really wrong with me right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this new?
No, this has been going on for a while, and that's why I'm here, clearly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a thought you've had before and a feeling you've had before.
Yeah.
Has anything wrong ever happened as a result of it?
No, no. And this, I think what makes it harder is right now, I just feel like I want to jump out of my skin and go to a hospital or something, but I know that I don't have to, and that just makes this really hard because I know that there's nothing wrong. So no, nothing's ever actually happened. But then it feels like, well, what if this time, you know?
What if this is the exception?
Yeah.
Well, I'd wager it's not, you know? So there's a one that we can write down there straight away. What if something really bad is going to happen right now?
Yeah.
You know, any others that pop in?
It's not so much what if, but it's like maybe like scenarios are playing in my head. Like, does this guy know how to do CPR? I mean, I'm not going to, you know, I didn't want to ask you that, but like, does he have a defibrillator, or like, how far is the hospital from here? That's what's going through my head right now.
So a lot of people with anxiety and panic will often worry about their heart. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, what if my heart explodes, stops?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not happened so far in this therapist, office, but, and again, I'd wager it's not going to happen now. Well done, by the way, for engaging. I know it's very difficult to concentrate.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write that one down too. So what if something bad's going to happen? What if it's something to do with my body? Good start. Well done. Any other what ifs?
I mean, you know, what if I can't calm down this session? Like, I really want to do something good here today. And I feel like I don't want to spend the whole hour just freaking out and wanting to, like, you know, dial 911. So yeah. Like, what if this takes too long to get through?
Even if you did, I think that's a good session. At the moment, you've come in here, a new place, and you explained to me before and over the phone that you find it very intense outside of your safe zones. You've done really well to be here. And actually, you're doing some really hard work right now, which is great. Also, I always like to reassure people, particularly people who are panicking and they're anxious, is that adrenaline can't last, you know? I almost guarantee you, by the end of the session, you won't feel as anxious. You might feel a bit shaken and tired, and there might be some latent anxiety, but it won't feel as intense as it is now.
Mm.
You know? And I'm going to go out on a whim there, you know? I've not been wrong yet with people panicking in here, but, you know, obviously your brain's probably thinking, what if I'm the exception to the rule?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Like, it's almost like, you know me or something. Like, yes, that's exactly what it's like. All I care about right now is, if something happened to me, you could do something about that, right? Like, you could call for help and all that.
Yeah, I mean, if there was actually an emergency, I would, but I don't see an emergency here. I just see you and your body going through a very normal thing. It doesn't feel normal in here, though, does it?
No.
But it will do, because the threat response is engaged. You don't really need to do anything other than to concentrate on what we're doing.
Yeah.
Even
answering that question was really silly, because after it comes out of my mouth, I know, like, why did I ask that? Why did I ask that question? I don't have to ask that question.
I don't think it's silly, but it's nice to vocalize it, you know, and be actually, yeah, I'm vocalizing a thought, and that's okay.
Mm.
Okay, so we've done the thoughts. This next part is the feelings. Tell me about how it feels.
You mean like physically how it feels?
Yeah, you can do if you like.
Yeah, my heart is pounding, and I could feel, like, when you see that little jump that I did, that's a skipped heartbeat. Like, those freak me out, and, you know, I'm having a lot of those right now, and just feeling like I can't get a deep enough breath, and feeling a little bit dizzy. Not really. I don't know. It's not dizzy. I don't know what it is. It feels like I'm on a boat, even though I'm sitting here on the sofa, and it's just a feeling of agitation. My fingers are tingly a little because I think I'm overbreathing, and I know enough to know that, but it's just a lot. Like, my body is just way up here right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
It will come down. Mm-hmm. It will. And it's okay. I know your fingers are tingling, your heart's palpitating. It's just processing all that adrenaline. And I reassure you that adrenaline will start to come down. And it always does, doesn't it? How many times have you panicked? You know, it always peaks and troughs, and it will start to come down again. So you're okay. And we will start to notice that as the session goes on. So those feelings. And then the last part of anxiety I usually ask is sensations, but you've already described a few.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like, you know, the tingly feelings. Anything else?
No, I mean, I could go on and tell you everything that's happening in my body right now, but we would be here for 2 hours.
Okay, so yeah. Discomfort.
Yes, I'm uncomfortable, I'm afraid.
Good. Well, I like that. It's uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable and I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I don't like that you're uncomfortable and afraid, but I like that you can label that and see that. And I think that's really good. Yeah, this is really common. I bet you know, and even though it happens over and over again, I bet you feel doubtful. I doubt my safety here. Even though it's happened hundreds of times, I'm filled with a feeling of doubt.
Yeah, that, definitely that. Yes, this has happened to me so many times and I know that it's going to pass, but every time it happens, it still feels like it's not going to pass or that something is really wrong.
Yeah, that feeling of doubt is very normal right now. And it will pass on its own. It's supposed to. You know, it's part of our brains that just kicks off when it senses danger. Because when we doubt as humans, we give it our attention and we stay hyper alert, like a meerkat, you know? It's probably why you can't find it difficult to focus, why you can't have your usual daydreamy thoughts. It's okay. And everything you have listed so far is okay. And it will start to calm down.
Isn't there something I could do to make it stop right now?
No, all we do is show it. And I'll explain this more as therapy goes on. But all we can do is show it that it's okay, threat response. You're not needed right here. And all you need to do is concentrate on this conversation and just work on grounding yourself in this room. You know, that's okay. There's no magic technique I'm necessarily using here. You look very healthy to me. Yeah, you're a bit uncomfortable and you're fidgety, but there's nothing going wrong from what I can see. And I do this all day as a job. So, you know, you're okay. That's just in that anxious state.
It's a good point.
In here, for how you're presenting so far, I usually use cognitive behavioral therapy, which is CBT. Have you heard of that before?
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah. So what I like to do with CBT initially, particularly with the panicky feelings, so there'll be none of this talking about childhood and things like that yet. There may be a time for that during our time together, but for now, we're just going to focus on the here and now because it sounds like there's this sense of immediacy.
All I care about is the here and now, dude. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So we're not going to bother with all that and, you know, looking at all the reasons why, you know, all these things happened in the past. This is just a here and now thing, and that's what we're going to look at.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're going to use CBT. And we've already started it. We've already started to formulate a picture here, you know. I'm going to circle here this around your thoughts, feelings, sensations, you know. That's all that's happening. I'm just going to put a big circle around that, label it anxiety, you know. But the problem is everyone has these sensations. But what I'm hearing, Drew, is that you are perhaps fearing this anxiety.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't want this to happen ever again. If you could give me some magic thing right now that would make it never happen again, I would give you $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we feel that no one likes to be anxious. But people with this kind of presentation, in this kind of, you know, don't be afraid of the word disorder, but like sometimes people with panic disorder or any anxiety disorder, what they tend to do is not only fear the feelings, but they seem to misinterpret it. And I think I've noticed even that as you've come into the room, you seem very healthy and here, but we're misinterpreting this urgency. And that's something that we work with in CBT as well.
You know? Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds very right. I know it's not, there's nothing wrong, but yet it feels like it is. I'm actually starting to calm down a little bit now already.
Great. What did you do?
I'm just getting tired. Like my body's getting worn out.
but also notice, where's your attention been during this state of urgency?
That's a really good question. I would say in the last couple of minutes when you started talking about CBT, for some reason you caught my attention and I've been a little bit more, I feel like I hear you clearly and I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but like you kind of got me a little bit there. And so I've been a little more interested in what you have to say. And that's why I think maybe I'm starting to feel a little better. I don't know. I get out of my head a little bit.
You've been listening to everything I've said since you've come in and your attention's been on me. And that's something really important that we'll tap into as these sessions go on.
Okay.
When you've panicked at home and things like that, where's your attention been?
Oh, entirely on every sensation in my body and all the thoughts. And I'm trying to talk myself out of it. 100% on me.
It's like you're wrestling with it a little bit.
Yeah, it's tiring, man. It's really tiring. Yeah.
It is. Well done. Well done for doing that. I'll also talk to you a bit about the other modalities that that I work with in here. Mm-hmm. But for now, I think we should just sit and kind of celebrate your first anxious exposure. And I'll tell you about anxious exposures shortly.
All right.
Thanks, Drew.
Thanks, Josh.
I forgot to mention that your dress sense is a symptom of an anxiety disorder.
Is it a symptom of panic disorder to dress like you're 18 forever?
I don't think I can work with you. I don't think it's a professional match. I don't want to look at that every week.
No more hoodies, please.
I mean, I don't know how we did there, but keep it in. Let's put the... we deserve a round of applause.
Oh, we do. That. Let's see. You work really good, man. I would hire you as my therapist.
It was all right. It was just kind of going with it. It's hard to take you seriously because I talk to you all the time. yeah. Also, Craig, the critic's like, the hell was that? But that's just a little insight into how I would initially work with them, or maybe a more conventional CBT therapist. What you've got to remember is that if you're seeking therapy for anxiety, the modality is very important.
Yeah.
Particularly if you have an anxiety disorder and OCD. Drew, what do I mean by modality?
Modality is the way you would treat it, right? So modality is just a fancy word for treatment type. Like if you have a sinus infection, the modality of treatment might be a Z-Pak antibiotics or whatever. People know that stuff. So in therapy, the modality of treatment might be psychoanalytic. We're going to talk about your past and your childhood. It might be, you know, cognitive behavioral. We're going to talk about your beliefs and your ideas and your thoughts and exposure and all that stuff. So it's just the way you treat it. That's what modality is. And there's a lot of different ways that therapists will approach this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a style. So yes. you mentioned psychodynamic. So a lot of people who haven't been to therapy before, you know, they may picture this old traditional version of therapy where they have to lie on a sofa and do thought association. Yep. You know, tell me the first word that comes to your head when you think of your mother. Obviously psychodynamic exists. I don't recommend it for anxiety disorders. In fact, I heavily advise do not do psychodynamic for anxiety disorders. It's just my opinion as a therapist, but it's usually it's a very digging style of therapy where there's an underpinning meaning for things. And don't get me wrong, that exists in certain things in life. But a lot of anxiety disorders are like what we said in our role play, which is I fear the sensations and I'm misinterpreting the threat response. How we got there, maybe there's a role to play. Mm-hmm. But as Drew says in an analogy that he used years ago, which is, you know, firefighters want to get to the house and put out the flames first. They don't turn up and be like, I wonder what caused this.
After, maybe they do.
Afterwards. That. Right. Yeah, afterwards, maybe.
You know, it's funny because doing that little role play that we did, I was trying to connect to what it felt like back then. I think I did okay with it. I mean,
those
are vivid memories, right? So
yeah.
I think in that situation, when you were like, what are you focused on? And I was, you know, I'm focused on me right now. This is a here and now question. Like if somebody, and I did, I remember I have no ill will with this person. But I did see a therapist for two sessions and she was clearly psychodynamic in her orientation. I know that now. And all I cared about was, all right, I'll talk about this stuff with you, but does that mean that you're going to come up with something that will make me calm down? So people in the grips of disordered anxiety really just want, they're on fire. They need to put the fire out right now. So if you're going to go into digging or just traditional talk type therapy, a lot of times our goal is off base there. Does that mean today we're going to come up with something, some epiphany that will make me calm down for the next week? And no, generally not. So that's what makes it very ineffective, you know, for this sort of thing.
And it's a lot of digging and detective work, but for me, it was actually very, very unhelpful when I had an anxiety disorder, because it culminated this belief that I could find a miracle thought to make all the suffering go away.
Yeah.
So if I sit there and go through the deepest echelons of my memories and find why I feel this way, even though it was just a panic attack that happened on a Tuesday afternoon because I was super stressed and going through a very stressful time in my life, that was just adding to rumination. So in my experience as a kind of expert in this topic, stuff like psychodynamic. And also another modality that I'm trained in is person-centered, mm-hmm. which is I love, mm-hmm. but it's a type of therapy where you go where the therapist doesn't really say much. You know, yeah. they allow you to have the space. And it's a very powerful form of therapy. I think every therapist should be trained in it. But again, if you're going there with OCD and intrusive thoughts and the therapist just is kind of reflecting back to you, trying to be in your frame of reference and things like that, it's comforting to be seen and it's comforting to have that space and respect. But sometimes, particularly with anxiety disorders, we kind of want a little bit of guidance. And that's why, again, in the role play, when someone came in, I'd use the CBT psychoeducation style mm-hmm. Approach to be like, okay, well, let's learn what's happening in our bodies. And that's something that CBT, third wave CBT as well. Mm-hmm. So things like acceptance and commitment therapy.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if metacognitive therapy is third wave, but it's the same ilk.
It is the same ilk. Interesting, the MCT people really seem to want to differentiate themselves from
CBT. Oh, yeah, they all want to start a cult and be whatever, as do all modality purists. But in general, yeah. I mean, there's lots of similarities in that. And they'll say, no, there's not. I was like, well, there is. I can literally just get a pen out and cycle the similarities in Becky and third wave and that. But anyway, so when you're seeking out a therapist, it's important to actually look at the kind of modality that they are trained in.
I think it's important to recognize, too, that in my other podcast, The Anxious Truth, one of my more popular episodes is, why doesn't my therapist talk about it like this? People will ask me, like, why don't I have a therapist and they don't talk about anxiety like you do? Well, sometimes it's just, so when Josh says, like, you should really look at what the therapist's modality is or what their theoretical orientation is, that's what's being drilled into me. You have to have a theoretical orientation. Now, you could be an integrative therapist, which means I'm going to take pieces of different types of modalities and theories and apply them depending on the context, which I think makes perfect sense. That's what I would do for sure. But it's important to, because a therapist, at least here in the States, the way that they train us is, whatever your theoretical orientation is fine, as long as it's an orientation. So if you want to treat panic disorder with Gestalt therapy, you guys can Google that if you want, but you can, if you really want to. There's no law that says you're not allowed to do that, but it's good to know what the person believes about and anxiety. I'm having recurring panic attacks. I'm afraid to leave my house. What do you think that is a good question to ask a potential therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah. They would be reluctant to diagnose you in an initial call, of course, and they'll be careful. But while I believe that there's some unhealed pain is one answer, I believe that your brain has learned some unhealthy habits is an answer you might get from someone like Josh or me. That's a different answer. And that's, to me, that's the answer I needed back then.
Yeah. I mean, my panic disorder came from an accumulation of loads of stress, trauma, and grief. Mm-hmm. But knowing that and exploring that was not helping my current situation.
Right.
I just wanted to stop feeling scared rather than readdressing traumatic stuff. I did go back and readdress those things. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, I have had Gestalt therapy, which is a school of thought that looks at you as different parts of your human, you as a human. And I did something called the empty chair technique from Gestalt therapy, where for my grief, so because I'm a very cynical, miserable guy, and I was addressing my grief, and my Gestalt therapist asked me to picture an empty chair and say, well, what would you imagine this person who you lost, imagine they were sat there, like, now just go with it, suspend your disbelief. What would you say to them? That was really, really powerful, but I wasn't going there from panic disorder at the time. I was okay with that. I'd stopped fearing fear. I understood what was happening with my body, so that equipped me to do powerful emotional work like that, because anxiety came up when I do things like that, but that was a different stage of therapy that I was in, and that helped me process my grief.
The therapist I worked with them. Oh, I'm sorry, Josh. I stepped on you.
No, you carry on.
The therapist that I worked with the most, and she was not an anxiety specialist. So she was, I would love to say her name because she was really great for me. Even though she was not an anxiety specialist, she said right away, well, this isn't what I specialize. But she also had a background as a an acute care nurse. And she said, if someone comes into the ER and they're bleeding, the very first thing we have to do is stop the bleeding. And like, you're bleeding, you need to stop the bleeding. And then maybe there's a wound that needs to be, you know, fixed. And I can maybe help you with that, but the bleeding has to stop first. That was such a, that stuck with me from the day she said that.
Yeah.
First, we stop the bleeding. And I'm like, you know what? And I respect her so much because she said, this isn't really my bailiwick. And she recommended a few people. And I said, well, I think I could do it on my own. And she supported me while I did exposures on my own. And she cheered for me, even though that's not what she does. And
that's really interesting, isn't it? Because you don't, a lot of people listening to this podcast will be equipped with a lot of the information. Because if you're up to episode 45 with us,
yep, you know.
You'll know a lot about what's happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I never thought about that. So if you find a good therapist that you connect with, and they're going to be a cheerleader for a while, and they're on board with you doing exposures and things like that, and you want to park digging through the deep stuff first, and you want to go do exposure, that's super powerful.
And she was smart enough to know enough about it where she would help me with little, you know, refocusing things in session and how did it go and how did it, you know, what, where was your struggle? And she didn't give me exposure. She didn't do CBT with me, but she was so super supportive and it worked, which I think leads us to the whole, like, that theory that says all therapy works. What do you think about all therapy works?
No, I think a lot of therapy, it has to be right. So, you know, here's the shameless plug and, in my latest book, I talk about anxiety therapy. So if this is a topic that interests you, you will love this book. And Drew helped me actually write a chapter about what does good therapy look like? And that, you know, in order to have good therapy, then the whole concept of kind of bad therapy has to exist. And good therapy is a match of a connection with your therapist and a matching modality to help. So for example, when I had OCD, and this is a big one for the OCD crowd, if you're an OCD person and a lot of your compulsions are rumination and seeking reassurance, you could go to a really kind, wonderful, empathetic therapist who's perhaps trained in person-centered or someone who's analytical and wants to dig deeper behind the thoughts. But if these thoughts are just attempts to seek reassurance compulsively for intrusive thoughts, you'll end, you know, you can end up going, being there for months, just going round and round and round. And actually it's not helpful therapy because the therapist then becomes a source of reassurance giving.
Yeah.
And that's one step away from the willful tolerance of uncertainty. And we almost can kind of facilitate a reliance. There's actual research on that to show that conventional talking therapy for OCD and intrusive thoughts can be harmful. Also, it kind of can add to rumination. So when you're sat there reflecting on thoughts like, what if I don't check all the plugs before I go to sleep? What if I jump off this bridge? That could be misinterpreted by a therapist from a different school of thought.
Yeah.
So someone who's into kind of symbolism, maybe you're, you know, a Jungian therapist or whatever, you're like, oh, I wonder why my client wants to jump off this bridge. You don't. The client doesn't want to jump off the bridge. They're just having an intrusive thought, you know, and that's how I treat it. You know, obviously you do your safeguarding and stuff and like check that this person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, 99% of the time, these are people with OCD going, I don't want to jump off the bridge, but what if I do? You know, and around and around and around you go.
Yeah.
And so, whereas if you go to someone trained in CBT, particularly in exposure response prevention, they hear that stuff all the time and they'll go, okay, well, let's have a look. Let's see here. This is, then they include psychoeducation and they're like, okay, this is kind of what we have to do.
Yeah. And I think, so the all therapy works thing is, yeah, that's based on the idea that the therapeutic alliance, your relationship with your therapist based on trust and respect and acceptance is critically important. So no matter what the modality is, but I agree with Josh, it can't, you got to have both of those things. So you can have a CBT anxiety expert, and if you don't make a connection with that person, that could wind up being, quote, bad therapy, or maybe not so terribly effective. So there's a lot of different things that go into this, but we are always making these claims based on data. So when we say that we're, you know, the things you hear us talk about are better or more effective, it's just because of a lot of research. When you can sit down and say, well, here's 100 patients that present with agoraphobia, for instance, and some went through this therapy, some went through CBT, and these were the outcomes. And CBT, these type of therapies, cognitive behavioral in nature, win every time. You know, when you look at symptom reduction and the improvement in quality of life and re-engagement with life, and then maybe other things come into play. That's why all therapy works. Yeah, if it's the right therapy and you are connected with a therapist you just have a connection with and you can trust and they accept you and they support you.
I think it helps because anxiety disorders can be measured. Yeah. So if you've gone to CBT, particularly in the UK, if you go to NHS CBT therapy, I'm not knocking CBT therapists here. I'm knocking the system. You often rush through six sessions, 30 minutes, spend 10 minutes filling out a form, the GAD 7, how depressed were you? How hopeless did you feel? Or how anxious did you feel? And things like that. And you circle 1 to 5 or whatever it is. That is data that can be used. A lot of other therapy therapists quite rightly get upset with that because you can't quantify other levels of therapy. Like I couldn't quantify, you know, personal growth and maturity on a chart. You know, I couldn't quantify like almost like, just kind of self-development. You can't really quantify that or just becoming, just growing as a person. You know, I don't think you can, there's no metric necessarily for that. And that was for the therapist that I did afterwards.
Yeah.
But
I think the other criticism of that data-driven thing that folks like us claim is, and it's a valid criticism. I'm 100% with this. Your anxiety disorder doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like all I have is the symptoms of panic. That's not true. You're a whole person. You've lived an entire life up to that point. So that's where other therapists will look and say, well, what is it? This person is only a walking collection of measurable anxiety symptoms? Of course not. So when you start to see other issues, you know, in my experience start to bleed in, is like, okay, well, folks like Josh and I will have you do exposures. That's a difficult thing to do. So if your sense of self-efficacy because of your past experiences or your upbringing is really low, you may have challenges in terms of implementing these recovery strategies. And that's when other modalities would start to dovetail in for sure and things to look
at. So good. So here's some helpful questions you can ask then if you're seeking therapy or finding a therapist. The number one would be is that, are you anxiety disorder informed? Do you understand what panic disorder and OCD? That's a big one, you know, and that's still one, even I ask now, you know, it's helpful, not always, but you know, are you anxiety disorder? Do you know how that presents, you know? And you can even ask them before you even have your session, you know, like, can you just tell me a bit about what you know about panic disorder? And they'll tell you or they won't. And that's good. That's for me is step one. What would you ask, Drew?
I would probably ask the same question for sure. This is tough because you don't want to like credential shop necessarily, but I would probably ask, you know, like, can you give me an idea of what training you've gone through or what organizations you belong to? Those aren't don't tell you everything about a therapist, but a therapist who's a member of the Anxiety and Depression Association of America is much, much more likely anxiety disorder informed. So if they can say, oh, I belong to the ADAA or I belong to the IOCDF, you're like, okay, that makes sense. I have done training on acceptance commitment therapy and multiple years of training in CBT. That's great. You know.
Yeah. And that's good. In the UK, it's a bit trickier, particularly if you've got OCD as well. You got to find the, you might have to do a bit of Google hunting here, just finding a therapist who is trained in ERP, exposure response prevention.
Yeah.
They do exist in the UK, but you always find them in like a rural village in Warwickshire. And you honestly, like one of the best, there is someone I know, she's brilliant. And she just lives in a rural, she has no idea that she's like gold dust. Yeah, she's like, oh yeah, I'm just trained in it. That's something I'm passionate about. Yeah. You know, she's not, you know, running her mouth on social media like you and I. It's just quite content living a life down there. But you can find them. Yeah, you might have to do a bit of clever Google searching to find them.
You know, I think it's funny about that, if I can chime in for a second. One of the interesting things is I think it's hard to find people who specialize in this stuff because there's nothing glamorous about this kind of therapy. It doesn't lend itself to big social media mic drops.
Except for you and I, Drew.
Well, you know, that's the devastating good looks and the charm, clearly. But, yeah, I know. I almost said it with a straight face. But I think in the end, it's really hard. That's why, you know, if you follow Josh and I on social media, there's a very big difference. I'm not saying better or worse. It's just we have a hard time attracting those, like, million likes, you know, on a reel. Because the best information and the best trained clinicians, I think, you know who the best therapist on YouTube is for anxiety? Someone you've never heard of who's literally shooting their videos on a 2009 iPhone from a unknown office followers. In Milwaukee
somewhere, and
probably that's the best anxiety therapist on YouTube. We don't attract big followings. We're not flamboyant. There's no mic dropped. It's not glamorous. We don't talk about the usual things. So it can be hard to find this person. Interesting. I'm looking at an email from a therapist that had reached out to me about maybe being on the podcast. She's a fellow of the Association of Contextual Behavioral Science. I'm like, this is a person who knows what they're talking about. You're never going to find that person. Good luck. You know?
Yeah.
But that's what I'm talking about.
That's good. Like I said, the connection with the therapist is what really matters. If you're someone who struggles with Craig the Critic, is he here today?
He is here.
It's Craig the Critic.
He's always here.
That usually exists outside of an anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. So you may even go to someone to talk about your self-esteem, mm-hmm. why you're very self-critical, you know, and maybe explore that. And we'll do an episode on self-esteem because I love talking about conditions of worth and Rogerian stuff. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. So these are the people that maybe will do the exposures, but then beat themselves up when they don't do it right. They're angry at themselves because they're anxious. They criticize themselves for being, you know, they think they're failing or a bad parent or whatever. It's good to even take that to a therapist and be like, you know, I am working through an anxiety disorder at the moment and I'm pretty well informed on it, but I really want to explore why I'm such an ass to myself. Mm. I always advocate doing that too.
Yeah.
And another note as well, before we answer some questions and play a cool dinner anyway, is that if you have symptoms of PTSD, so you're someone who, you know, often has flashbacks, instantly fawns, you know you've got OCD, not OCD, PTSD, mm-hmm. when you have the kind of acute anxiety, you feel like you're back in the moment, you have obvious triggers, you have night terrors, these kind of things. There's some really good stuff. Find a trauma trained therapist who's particularly trained in EMDR because that has some good evidence behind it. And just be a bit picky with trauma therapists because lots of people call themselves trauma therapists. But do go looking for the credentials if you do struggle with PTSD. That's very important.
Yeah. We could probably do an episode on like, what if there's more than one thing? Because you can wind up, you know, people will say, well, do I do the trauma first or do they do the anxiety first? Don't know. Like, it depends on your particular situation. You might have do it all at the same time. You might do it in sequence. You might have the same therapist. You might have multiple therapists. It's hard to really say. So this is choppy waters for people to navigate. What does anxiety therapy look like? How do I find a therapist? We'll do more episodes on this for sure.
Can we have a celebration? Did it anyway? We love these did it anyways. Please send them in to disorder.fm. We love hearing them.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's read a did it anyway, and then we'll do an audio one. I have one to read. It's been pretty good. This person did not give us permission to use their name, but this person wrote in and said, I've been listening for about 6 months now, and I just want to say how much you guys have helped me. Well, I'm glad. I've had anxiety, partly caused by emetophobia, since 2021, and used to spend months and months trying to Google how to end a panic attack, which they put in quotes, chewing on gum to distract myself, running away from panic. But then I found you guys and the idea of non-resistant to anxiety. Now I go to university in a big city. I haven't used any safety behaviors in over a year, and I have traveled hundreds of miles. My big did anyway was last month when I traveled 3 hours away by myself to meet a hero of mine and listen to him do a speech. By now, anxiety is becoming increasingly normalized and is no longer catastrophized. Honestly, you guys are great. Keep it up. Very good. Big round of applause for that.
Yes, well done. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I love anxiety is increasingly becoming normalized and no longer catastrophized. Best part of that one. So good. Mm. That's what you're looking for. Should we do an audio one?
Yeah, let's do an audio day. Anyway.
Let's do it. Here we go.
Hello, Drew and Josh. First off, I just want to say thank you for creating such an awesome podcast. I just wanted to come on here and share my win, a big win of mine. So when I first fell into the anxiety cycle, I was so bewildered that I unfortunately had to quit my job just because I didn't know what was wrong with me. After being unemployed for a couple of months, as I've been on my recovery journey, I felt like a big step in my journey would be to go back to work. I just want to share that I was able to finally put in the effort and get a job, and I just finished my first week of work, and I couldn't be more proud of myself. Been having lots of what if thoughts, you know, like what if I get a panic attack at work? What if I can't handle it? What if things become too overwhelming? What if I get depression while I'm working? You know, just so many what if thoughts, but I've just been accepting them and just going along with it. And I wouldn't necessarily say I'm 100% recovered, but this is definitely me rolling up my sleeves, taking my life back one step at a time. And yeah, I hope this serves as some sort of hope or inspiration for others.
Amazing.
Good one. Yep.
I know that was sent in about 5 months ago because we went through them. And so thank you for sending that in. And we hope that wherever you are, what you're doing now, you're keeping it up. Well done, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do we have any questions?
I've got a few good, nice questions. I think we might save them for the next episode, though, because I'm just aware of the time of this episode. Yeah, but I'll definitely include them in the next one.
Sounds good.
But yeah, thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for pre-ordering. And how does that make you feel? If you've pre-ordered and emailed me with a question, I will get back to you. I've had a few that's come in and it takes me a little while to read them, but I will send you an audio answer back and thanking you and stuff like that. Thank you to all those that have done that already. I'm really excited for this. So, if you want to do it and pre-order it, give us a shout. If not, keep tuning in and thank you for your attention.
Yeah, we'll see you again in the next one. We'll do more on this for sure. We can talk about this for hours. See you guys next time.